He doesn't sound like a nerd,
but the computers are still scared of him.
Keeping your technology running smoothly, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
So much in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. On the IT Pro series, I'm going to talk about interviews without discussion of wages. Well, they're worthless. I'm also going to talk on the scam series about the immediate luminary scam. Marty's going to have a bunch of connections and connectors and clips and assembly, and we're going to talk about that. Keith McCedor, the history of Mac backups, and this is part of what I'll call an irregular series. We'll go through this over the course of time. And then Steve Kesky, many years of medicine technology. We've got a bunch of questions as well. Kevin asks, how can I streamline my workflow with automation tools? Alex, what's the best way to organize my digital files? Luke, how did video games influence the development of personal computers? And Brian, why are my email attachments not sending? If you miss any of these different items that we cover here on the show, we do have a podcast. You can go to the website at computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com, and you can also reach out to me there. We have a place where it says contact us today. Definitely reach out that way, or you can phone me at 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-6373. 888. Let's dive into the news from this past week. The news of technology and all of that. And another person has been, I don't know how to phrase this, accused of being the Bitcoin inventor. Peter Todd is his name, and he is the subject of a new HBO documentary. However, this is the latest in a line of people or groups of people numbering about 20. Okay, this guy, Peter Todd, he's denied it, but he has also had to go into hiding due to the current level of pleas from various people looking. They've got their hand out. They want him to share some of that $73 billion in bitcoins that are believed to be owned by the inventor. All right, let's be really clear about this. The anonymity of that inventor of Bitcoin is actually important due to the wealth, but also the potential for various more physical threats. Whoever it is would be questioned, perhaps under legal threat in some countries, and so much more. There's a lot of different issues as to why this guy or gal should remain anonymous for as long as they can. Craig Federighi is one of the biggest names at Apple. And this week he talked about Apple Intelligence, especially in regards to the new features with Cleanup. And that is an editing feature within the photo app. What I found most interesting was that there's an approach that it should be used for simple edits that do not change the core content, but merely modify elements that might detract from that original image. All right, contrast this mellow tweaking approach to the other tools that have been working to show just how much they can do. Oh, hey, add a kitty cat into my picture. Yeah, there's a lot of different things that they can do, but is that right? Federighi's approach, and by extension, Apple's, is to ensure that the photo should be realistic and not to generate satire, outlandish, or whatever other items that could be misinterpreted by the viewer as reality. And I think this is admirable. I think we should be doing our best to keep as real as we can. Okay, if you can do it in Photoshop pretty simply within, I'll call it 3 minutes, and you're not adding in a bunch of stuff, you know, that's probably an okay realm to be dealing with. Now, Amazon Prime account holders, they can now save money on gasoline. Yeah, this is interesting. There's a partnership with British Petroleum, BP, Amoco, and AMPM gas stations. if you're willing to load up a side app. Now, this is part of an ongoing effort by Amazon to return more value to customers beyond the free delivery in the streaming services. And there's a lot of other things that come, you know, Amazon Music, and you get the idea. Now, I checked out the sign up, and really the only hang up that I have is that the app is well, they want to send you messages and updates, and they want to know your location and all of this. So I'm going to tell you right now, I leave it up to you. Is it worth a little privacy? Is it worth a little bit more in notifications to get 10 cents a gallon back? I'm not fully sold on this idea. I think this is going to be seen more and more in all of our regular interactions in life. So it's an interesting concept, and we'll see this time and time again, all to offer us some discounts or whatever it is. Now, Netflix, they've had an issue for a little while. While their TV series have been considered far better by most, their constant movie mill has over the course of everything, it's been kind of lackluster. Okay, for every Red Notice or the Adam Project or Enola Holmes movie, there have been a number of stinkers that just seem to have been rejected by even the Hallmark Channel. I mean, we're just talking bad. So the new film chairman, Dan Lin, is, and he's been in that office for about 6 months or so. He's reported to be dialing back the number of movies by about half, from 50 down to somewhere between 25 and 35. But he wants to bump up the quality and therefore, yes, the viewers. It remains to be seen how this is going to unfold over the coming years, but if done properly, it could keep Netflix rolling at, yes, the very top of the heap. One thing they are talking about, one big, huge blockbuster every quarter. So that'll be pretty good, I hope. The world of AI, no matter what brand name is attached, is running into deeper trouble. This week, I saw no less than a dozen articles decrying the constant usage of this term. One particular opinion piece compared what they referred to as the AI bubble to the dot-com bubble from about 25 years ago. Media is talking about AI forecasting of the coming election, claiming their algorithm is best. Manufacturers are slapping the AI label on everything. And yeah, the AI claims of success are being investigated across the board by all of the accounting firms, the audit firms, the folks are going in. Are you really getting your money's worth out of AI? And the numbers aren't pretty. OpenAI is currently valued at around $157 billion, while all the generative AI revenues are running less than $10 billion. That's pretty scary when you consider all of the different platforms that are out there. Forget Google and Microsoft and OpenAI. There's a bunch more beyond that. Now, a few weeks ago, I talked about this. Meta announced their new glasses named Orion. At the time, I was less than impressed by the visual design, and I figured I wasn't going to plunk down a couple of $1,000s for something, frankly, that ugly. However, oh man, the current cost for these is not what I think anyone could have expected. Some minor details have come out, and current manufacturing cost alone is $10,000 a pair for these crazy goggles. Let's be real clear. That's before we start talking options and the profit that's going to be built in and whatever else, subscriptions and whatnot that the folks at Meta may dream up. Affordability is what is going to keep many of these ideas and dreams from reaching market saturation for many years to come. The Federal Trade Commission's click-to-cancel rule has lawsuits coming. Multiple groups representing various interested parties who are against the idea of making it easy to unsubscribe as it is to subscribe, well, they've launched their various lawsuits. I tried to think of a way to make this sarcastic, but I struggled. So here are some of the names that are associated with funding the three groups that are launching these lawsuits: Comcast, Charter, Disney, AMC, Paramount, Google, Netflix, Amazon, Meta, NFL. Look, I'm really dearly hoping that the courts are going to back the consumer, but this could take a while, so we may have to just sit back for a while. And real quick, the senior VP of marketing, Greg Joswiak, announced that this week, this is of Apple, that we would see announcements from them on a number of new products. If so, Keith McIntyre, our resident expert on Apple, will be on hand next week to cover the latest news. Coming up next, Kevin asks about automation tools here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it, meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
Kevin had a question for me. You can have your questions answered as well. Go to ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Scroll down to where it says contact us today. And I will get back with you in regards to answers to your computer concerns and your technology questions, or maybe it's the other way around. Anyways, Kevin's question, how can I streamline my workflow with automation tools? So it's a good question. And it's something that is I'm not going to give you a technical answer. We're going to give you a lot of the philosophical, kind of like that. The answers as to why you should do it, and not so much the tools themselves, but some of the concepts that you're going to need to be thinking about, as well as why to do it. So let me frame this first by saying one of the biggest automation projects that I did for a workflow was actually not for myself, but for our company's CFO. And this goes back a number of years ago. And he would do this entire close on a weekly basis, a trial close, to track the numbers of where we were going with our particular company. How much were we making? How much were we losing? What were the different areas where we had problems going on and so forth? And this was a big, huge financial question that he had to answer every Monday. Except, well, it took an entire day to do it. So he would do it on Monday and then actually get the answer back on Tuesday. Off to his management structure, our CEO, and off to our corporate offices. And so there was a lot to that. Here's the thing. We can automate a number of things. We can drive some of that time down, the time it takes to get that answer back. And we did do that. We accomplished that by bringing the overall time, instead of him spending 8 hours on Monday, poking and prodding and clicking here, clicking there, doing this, uploading that, downloading this, processing that, and then going through all of these different hoops. It was a big, huge effort. We managed to bring that 8 hours down to 4 hours. Okay, that in itself was a time savings for how soon we could get the numbers and double check them and then forward those on to corporate. Great, that's a key thing there. Also, we had to eliminate a lot of the time that he was spending poking and prodding. He's a CFO. He makes a bit of money. He makes more money than the IT guy. So we had to figure out how do we alleviate the load on our CFO and offload that into the computer. Now, I spent overall probably, I'm going to say a month worth of hours doing that. Okay, there's a bit of a payoff time that we start to look at. How long does it take us to automate all of this? But there's more that comes with this in that when you think about this as a big, huge project, he's clicking through a number of different things, or in this case, the computer is clicking through. If the computer is doing it, if the computer is doing item A, item B, item C, item D, E, F, G, H, I, and so forth through the alphabet. I recall we had a number of steps that we would go through, some of them quite repetitive, quite similar to the previous steps that we had done. If we're doing the automation like that, if we're tracking that, the accuracy, once we get it established, that we can tell the computer, do this, 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 and it can do that flawlessly each time, we reduce the amount of error. We reduce the errors that could have started in the manual process very early on, having us to go back to the start. So we found out in our tracking that overall we saved him enough time through the automation, through all of the different things we were doing, we managed to have a payoff amount, a payoff time of about 6 months. That's how long it took us to pay it off, the investment in my time to do all of this work. Not too shabby. Actually, that's pretty good. Now, how do we address these different things? How do we go through and we choose to streamline a workflow? First off, identifying repetitive tasks. You need to go through what are the things that you are doing regularly. You need to find those items and you need to look for different ways to automate those items. Now, there's a number of different software packages that will allow you to do this. There are so many different automation software packages out there. It's actually sometimes quite mind-boggling, but when you find out how valuable they are, how great it is to automate it, you start saying, okay, maybe this isn't all that bad. So the tool I used was something called Automate. Not an original name, but it existed nonetheless. There is something very similar to that. Microsoft Office has something called Power Automate. There are other packages out there. If this, then that. That'll do a lot of your personal kind of automation. There's something called Zapier, which has kind of that lower end, but it's more complex than if this, then that. And it all depends on what you're automating. So you have to look for the right automation software for what you're doing. A lot of these different packages will allow you to connect up different apps and automate the processes between them. Now, let's go another step further. Many different packages have macros available in them. Excel, very well known for having macros. As a matter of fact, most of the Microsoft products have the ability for you to set a macro. A macro is simply a set of instructions, and you can get quite complex with these. I have loaded up Excel spreadsheets with 20 or 30 macros, and they were very deep and very involved, and they would take all of this information, and they could take a list that I would download and then process through and go, okay, here's the results you wanted. So look into things like that. There are, again, so many different areas. You're looking to identify that repetitive task, that first item I was talking about, and figure out a way so you don't have to do it. Yes, you're going to invest time. You're going to invest time, more time than you would have in a day, more time than you would have in a week, more time than you would have probably done in 2 or 3 weeks. But when you get to the end of it, there's that reward there, because then it turns into that one button push process. Boom, done. Now, the one other item I'm going to throw in here is you want to regularly review any automation you've created. You've got to check through all of those processes, and you need to make sure that they're still doing things the exact same way that you did them before. You're going to do that just on a regular basis, but every time you update Excel, every time you update Microsoft Office, every time you change anything along through your automation. Oh, we used to do this. We had steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Oh, we're removing 8 or we're changing 8. So you need to review the process all over again. But because you've split it up into so many of these different little chunks and tasks that are already automated, it becomes a lot easier. Just like you might see in a manufacturing environment, much like you'd see in most companies, an efficient assembly line will produce better results. And implementing automation is going to help you. It's going to enhance your workflows. It's just a beautiful thing to do. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Phone number 888-NERD 888. That's 888-6373-888. Keith McDonough joins me now, and this is we're going to start off what I'm going to call an occasional series, and this occasional series is we're going to fit this in between when we've got like a slower Apple News Week. We'll talk about this kind of topic, but I want to really dig deeper into this entire world of Time Machine. And no, we're not talking about
Doc and Marty McFly.
Doc Brown and Marty McFly. We're not talking Back to the Future. We're talking what we use if we're using a Mac to backup systems. And let me start off, Keith. Let me ask. I want to go back in time. I was going to start off with Time Machine, but I take that back. I want to start off. What did you do way back in the day before Time Machine even showed up? How did you backup systems? Like the original Macs, get out a big huge pile of 3.5-inch floppies or what?
Well, you're not far off, Benjamin, because the reality of it is that the reason Apple developed Time Machine was because the solutions that were available were spotty to non-existent. But So there were some solutions when we were working on the classic Mac operating system, but they were very piecemeal. And much like you just said, people were not interested in doing a whole system backup like we do today with Time Machine, where it creates an encapsulation of the entire volume, meaning the operating system, your plugins, your system extensions, your applications, and all of your personal files, whether it be your Word documents and Excel spreadsheets and PowerPoints, or your PDFs, your music library, your photos library, anything and everything you would save was not managed the same way back then. Back then, you would pop in a 3.5-inch floppy disk, and the 3.5-inch floppy would basically be giving you 1.5 megabytes, 1.44 megabytes worth of storage. And if you were looking to back up your documents folder, which literally had probably not even necessarily Microsoft Word documents that far back, it could have been ClarisWorks documents. Sure. It could have been Mac Write, another precursor to word processing on the Mac before Microsoft created versions for the Mac. And when you're working with files that small, you can get away with, oh, my backups are on a floppy.
Sure.
Or maybe you didn't even have a big enough hard drive, because if it was the earliest classic Macs, some of them didn't even have a hard drive, and you'd literally be booting the operating system up off floppies, and then you would just run and save things on a floppy. It would prompt you for a floppy when it wanted to save something.
Okay. Now, so when did Time Machine come into play? So what year was that?
Time Machine didn't come into play until 2007. But let's not,
not get into the
21st century just yet. Let's stick in the 20th century for a little while and talk about the classic Mac operating system. I'm talking System 6, System 7, and then later when they changed the nomenclature to Mac OS 8 and Mac OS 9, which were still the classic version of the operating system with the little rainbow icon. Mm-hmm. The Apple menu, Apple logo.
Let me pause you there. Okay, so my grandfather had a Blueberry, one of the Blueberry Macs.
And that was a dual booting machine. It booted into the classic Mac operating system, and then also later into a very early version of the Mac OS X operating system, which is probably Mac OS 10.1, named Cheetah.
What would he have used? Because I remember he had the Blueberry and the keyboard and the hockey puck mouse, but he also had an external hard drive.
If he had the Blueberry, not the original Bondi blue one, which came out in 1998, do you remember in your back of your mind's eye whether he had a slot-loading CD drive or the tray that popped out?
Tray that popped out.
Okay, that was not the Blueberry. That was actually the Bondi blue, named after the Bondi Bay in Australia. Which is more of a tealish color. But if he was using that, what he likely would have done is, at that time, third-party companies like iMation were selling something called a super drive, which was a hybrid of a floppy disk drive and a drive which was kind of like a zip disk. Remember the zip disk which held 100 megabytes?
I still have one.
Yeah, and that was the dual nature of that drive, that was backwards compatible with the floppies, were what made it a real competitor to the iOmega zip disk at the time. But there was a piece of software for the Mac, for the later versions of the classic operating system, Mac OS 8 and Mac OS 9, called Retrospect, by a company called Dance Development. And I had a job. It was one of my last corporate jobs before taking my Mac consulting practice full time. And we had that in an ad agency installed on 50 different Macs. And it would be really cool because we installed this backup software, had a destination for the backup. And every morning the users would come in and get a nice warm, fuzzy message on their screen. Hey, your Mac was backed up overnight. Great. We're backed up. We're confident of that. That is until the first time a user had a hard drive failure, and then we went to try to restore from the backup, and it was useless. That was when the software proved that it was garbage and that it just wasn't up to the task. And the software has changed hands so many times since Dance originally had it back in the 20th century, and it never panned out. So users were relegated to really getting a good backup by backing up their files manually, either burning them to a CD or to a floppy or both. And then it wasn't until much, much later that Apple took control of the situation.
All right. So this is just a glimpse at what we've got coming on this series. We're going to go through a number of different things in regards to backing up the time machine, time capsule, airport. We've got a few different things that you've highlighted that you want to touch on, and it'll all be just scattered throughout over the course of the coming months. As well as
best practices.
There you go. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. It's actually my favorite way for people to reach out to me. It allows me to file things around and move things around and sometimes do a little bit of research because I don't always have the answer right off the top of my head, believe it or not. Anyways,
everything else is off the top of your head.
Because I have no hair. That just makes it easier to put it up on top of my head.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, that's the voice of Marty Winston. He joins me now. Marty, you know what? We were talking about a particular type of connector. Rather than talking about the connector, I want to talk about you were working on a project. And what made you go down that road
connector?
Yes.
Great question. Most people working on prototypes of things only have one goal, make it work.
Yeah.
But if you're ever in a hurry to get it to market, You can't just make it work. You have to make it work with no opportunity for the production line to spend too much time on it, with no opportunity for someone on the production line to get things crossed up or have a little mistake in crimping a connector or any of those kinds of things. So part of the design process for me has always involved optimizing flow on the production line.
Yeah, yeah.
While reducing errors all you could. So that drove me to look for ways to connect wire to board. Mm-hmm. And these things I'm making have six to seven separate PCB boards in them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So doing that helps in some regards, makes it more modular, more like Lego sets. But it also means, and also lets you build the board separately to bring in as, hey, I got this chunk, goes here.
Yeah.
But when it's time to put them in, you don't want to poke a wire through a hole and have a soldering iron. That's not a good way to approach that stuff.
Gee, you think?
And speaking of things that go together differently, this is about the three-spine packed flat knockdown furniture assembly trick.
Okay.
And it's not exactly off the shelf yet. They sent me two demo kits. It's a cool new trick for creating things like furniture pieces that pack flat, go in a flat box, so it's cheaper to send to the store.
Yeah.
They ship flat, they click together without tools, no fasteners, no fittings,
And when you're done, you have a stable piece.
Okay, so they're not doing the usual metal with the weird hooks on it that goes into another screw that's got a little weird bulb on the top of it?
You are correct. They are not doing that.
I have no idea what they call those, but
this one's called Three Spine.
Okay.
It's licensed by Valinge Innovation. They sent me two small shadow box units. You start with one piece and have instructions. Bring in the next with an outward slant, then pivot it up until it snaps into place. And it snaps into place because of a little strip of plastic that's down in the slot that they milled in there for you.
Okay.
The snap is literal. It comes from that plastic piece embedded into a groove at the joint. And the result, as the website claims, is it flawless? The answer, not quite.
Yeah, when you said plastic as a connector, that initially starts to concern me.
Well, consider the kind of wire wrap things we use, zip ties.
Okay, yeah.
If you lay that strap down sideways, it's got some elasticity to it.
Yeah.
So if you push it out of the way while you're flipping the thing up and then it comes back into the slot, you've got a fairly good joint there.
Okay, all right.
That's what it looks like it's doing. Anyway, I had a slight gap between two of the boards in one of the two boxes. Very slight. I probably didn't mean anything. I've had worse results from knockdown assemblies. And my wife can tell you that, well, she can tell you tales of chisels and sandpaper and soap with some of them.
Yeah.
Anyway, this one was much better than those. And most people won't notice that small gap. That's just me. If you buy furniture using this three-spine technique, the odds are it will go together faster and easier than you expect. So keep an eye out for it.
All right.
Also, speaking of build assists.
Yeah.
The Evalast Hulk Fasteners Chain Collated Decking Clips.
Now, that's a mouthful.
I know, but okay. I'll explain it. The phrase "all hands on deck" originally referred to a seagoing crew, but if you've ever tried installing a deck behind your house, you know that all hands are never enough help to make everything come out evenly enough to not risk spousal disapproval.
Yeah.
It's an activity that's launched 1,000 clever products. Okay, less than 1,000 if you don't want fastener heads to show from above.
Okay,
we'll focus on a recent and very clever approach from Hulk Fasteners called Chain. It's an end groove decking board that gets fastened with polymer-coated stainless steel clips that come preloaded with screws, either metal screws for plank-style decking or timber screws. A companion hand tool, magazine, magazine loads, a 15-clip strip, and adjusts for the depth of the fastening groove below the surface of your decking. So a couple of seconds with a power driver embeds the screw, a swivel away separates it from the strip, and you're ready for the next one. You've got 15 pieces of little manual automation in putting that board down on the deck.
Okay.
These chain collated decking clips and hand tools are sold at many traditional lumber yards, or go to Evalast, E-V as in Victor, A as in Apple, -LAST, evalast.com.
Okay. Interesting stuff. We a lot of building this week, so you got some project going. I'm trying to figure this out, but maybe you'll fill me in sometime soon.
Well, when you do learn about it, it will be an absolutely transparent experience.
Okay. On that note, that is the voice of Marty Winston. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade. But I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites.
These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
Guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, everybody they can, and they will utilize any trick they have at their disposal to lure you in. One of the items that has been around for a while is the immediate luminary scam, and that's how they refer to it. It is utilizing some celebrity, some major name that you may have heard of, you may be quite familiar with, and they will put up a sponsored advertisement, or they'll send you an email, they'll somehow reach out to you. And this is how Tom Cruise found that he can make millions more than he already has by investing in this cryptocurrency. You have to click here to find out. And it even goes through, depending on the variation, one of the ones that that I came across was a news webpage. It actually looked like a major news article about how this celebrity exposed a system that can make anyone rich by doing nothing. And then, yes, they give you a number of different claims, all kinds of different claims, but even a few links off to this get-rich-quick scam website. And they're talking about how rich you're going to get as soon as you hand over your email address, you sign up an account, and then they'll slowly move you along so you'll get into whatever it is that it is that they're trying to lure you into. And there's so many different variations. I'm resistant to giving you just the specifics of one, but they're looking for you to just deposit a few $100s, try it out, give it a trial run, and see how successful you can be. And the reality is, most of these celebrities have no idea about any of this. As a matter of fact, most governments have only the awareness that this is a scam and it's out to rake in money. And they're successful with this. A recent study came out and said that 20% of the people out there in the United States have fallen victim to some form of financial scam in the last year. What? The last year? Yes. There's a reason why I do this scam series, because it is that bad. It is that insane about how often the bad guys are not only reaching out and trying to make money off of us, but yes, how often they're successful. Look, if some celebrity found the method to magical riches beyond unimaginable dreams, they're not going to share this with you. They're not going to share this through some kind of pop-up ad. They're not going to share this with their best friends or even their agents, who typically aren't their best friends. But that's another story. I'll tell you, look, don't fall for any of this. If you really think that you should be chasing after any kind of these get-rich-quick schemes, do your homework. Dig deep. Look for people who are saying, yeah, this is a scam, and see how public it is, because if everybody knows how to get rich, then everybody would be rich. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Where's a nerd when you need one? Oh, he's right here. And now, it's time for Computer Talk Radio with Benjamin Rockwell.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The website, of course, ComputerTalkRadio.com, Computer Talk Radio. I am Benjamin Rockwell, and I am definitely a nerd. I've always embraced that concept, that moniker, if you will. And joining me now on radio's broadest to look at computers, technology, and how they impact you is Steve Geske. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
I never embraced being a nerd because I never had to wear glasses and had to tape them together.
I never had to tape my glasses together.
Me either.
I've always had the nerdier approach to choosing my glasses. They've always been kind of that ID badge that I've worn.
Yeah. Anyway, mankind has been looking for ways to find out how the human body works, going all the way back to Leonardo da Vinci.
Yes, he was known for drawing a couple of different
yes,
things.
He was really good at it.
Yeah.
But in 1890, a German physicist figured out how to create an X-ray machine.
Okay.
Now, that's in 1890. That's, you know, it wasn't in really good overall use until about 1900, but that allowed doctors to actually see our skeletons.
Okay.
That was a major step forward there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Broken bones, you know, all that kind of good stuff. But you still couldn't see what was going on. All right. Then we jump all the way to the 1950s.
Okay, yeah.
When they had taken the 1940s type of sonar, miniaturized it, and created what was called a sonogram.
Okay.
Now, using sound, they could actually see your heart working, your lungs working, you know, the actual movement of your organs.
Okay.
Which was great, but that wasn't quite enough.
Okay.
So we roll a bit further on. And we come up to the MRIs.
Yeah.
That's in the late 1980s, early 1990s when that really started taking off.
Okay.
Of course, that's the most expensive.
Yeah.
But it allows the doctor to look at the human body in three dimensions.
Yeah.
And then now look at all the diagnostic tools he can do. So all that technology going on, you know, and now, even today, they are working on using computers and robots to do microsurgeries where the normal doctor could not see into the incisions that he's doing. But now, with the use of computers and goggles and all that, they are doing some wonderful work.
Sure.
And that's how technology builds on technology.
Yeah, it definitely evolved quite a bit all the way on through. And you're very right in that it got more expensive as we moved along.
Oh, yeah.
I'll admit I've had X-rays. I've had an echocardiogram, so that's very, very similar to a sonogram. And I've had an MRI. And each of those had a different price tag attached to it. As a matter of fact, I've gotten x-rays multiple times just right there in the doctor's office. They had an x-ray machine off in a room over there. They're checking out my knees and, oh, yeah, let's take some more x-rays and click, click, click. All right. Yep. And they managed to develop them right away.
Oh, yeah.
I can tell right away whatever is going on, which is a lot better than what the technology was back in like the 80s.
Right.
Get an x-ray done and we'll get back to you in a week.
Yeah. And think of it, x-rays in a dentist's office.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
And I've had so many x-rays in a dentist's office.
Sure.
But yes, even x-rays. Of my broken bones and knees that I have plenty of those. We don't necessarily understand the technology and how it works. And even us nerds have a problem. But the general public needs to really understand the steps involved. And the reasons why doctors keep saying, well, we need better diagnostic tools and better this. And, well, it's only because if they have better technology tools, they can diagnose stuff a whole lot earlier than later.
Yeah.
Now,
oh, yeah. We're talking about, we're going to see a continual evolution of the diagnostic tools, the various various things that they're using to check us out. I'm not really deep into the medical field. I don't follow it a whole lot, but I can imagine that someday we're going to see various scopes will have different additional features beyond them. A matter of, somebody's doing an endoscopy, which is, stick that scope down the throat and they're looking through there. But maybe we'll see a combination of that scope and some level of sound being used. Maybe some level of probably not MRI because that's a bunch of big magnets. But we'll see some level of interaction with additional knowledge of what we have of science.
And Leonard McCoy with his little doohickey that he puts over your body and does his analyzing, that kind analysis.
The tricorder was amazing.
Amazing. It did.
Yeah.
It'll be fun when we
get to that level where it's just a portable thing and it has the ability to do x-ray, sonogram, and MRI all with something that is, not much bigger than a flash drive. The readout is actually coming off of your smartphone.
Hey, wait a minute here. I can see it on the screen,
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. And I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about all of this and I'm saying, doctors, McCoy walked into the hospital in the 20th century and gave a woman a pill and she grew a new kidney. I said, now that's interesting.
Yeah, I wonder, they never really framed why that pill did that, and it could be, we're talking a matter of 3 centuries worth of medical advances when you consider all that we've done in the time in the last 100 years, 130 years if we go back to the x-ray. You think about all of the advances we made in that period of time. What can we do with another 300 years, especially when we start looking at some of these technologies grow exponentially? Maybe the pill he gave her was, yes, it was in the form of a pill, but it was some form of a programmed item, which he programmed right there. And he think of one of the concepts we talk about or we see in science fiction is nanobots.
Yeah.
And it was a nanobot that went through and did all of the repair and fixed her kidney. Who knows?
Who knows?
They didn't expand on it. But that's part of science fiction. And I love that because it makes us wonder. It makes us think about what could be. With just a moment left, what do you imagine could be?
Oh, I can think of a whole lot of things that could be. Having a replacement knee, you can think of a lot of your appendages and being able to be fixed or replaced or regrown. It goes in many different directions.
Sure.
So as far as technology is concerned, I just had surgery on my back for a cyst. Yeah.
Okay.
I can see that being done, in the doctor's office for a couple, minutes.
Sure.
Oh, I'll just put this instrument over the top and it'll automatically do it and remove it.
Very cool.
Okay. Yeah.
Lots of different things are on the horizon.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Alex reached out, what's the best way to organize my digital files? Alex reached out, he called me at 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. Organizing digital files, organizing your email, organizing... Why is anybody asking me these questions? No, okay, all right. I will tell you, first and foremost, we all have this tendency when we save our files, we save it in our My Documents folder. Boom, and we just drop it in there, and we move on, and then next thing we know, we've got 1,000 of these in My Documents. They're not organized. They're not scattered through a number of different folders or anything like that. It's just like throwing it on your desk, and next thing you know, you've got a desk that has a pile of different files on it that is 2 feet high, and you're just struggling. You're like, I'm never going to be able to deal with this. So you have to go into this planning out how you're going to deal with all of the information that we're working with. In the modern day and age, we have so many files, so many emails, so many different things that it becomes unwieldy quickly. And I sympathize with this. So I have purposefully tried to separate things into buckets. And sometimes these buckets are buckets within buckets within buckets. We're layering these in. It's a folder hierarchy. And whether it's email or the various Word documents that I work with, whether it's the audio files that I'm working with for the show, whether it's databases I'm working on or Excel spreadsheets, I've got a lot of different things that I try to do to keep organized. And I have to keep revisiting all of these different things. So folder hierarchy, you need to go through and figure out the best way to organize your files into broad categories. Okay, so everything with Project A goes into this folder. And then what are the portions of Project A? So we need to separate those out. So Project A has the building process, or the planning process. Then we've got the building process. We have the testing process. And then we have the review process. So the planning process, that might be broken down into other subcategories. This is who I'm working with. These are the different concerns they have. And we start tracking these down. And once I get to about 10 files in that planning process, I start to look at ways to subcategorize those. Doesn't always work. It doesn't always get organized, and there are times where I have to go back and I have to focus everything down, and I have to start organizing all of those different items into smaller sized buckets and spread those out so that files are easier to find. Along the way, I have to follow naming conventions. I have to make the file names descriptive. I have to make them uniform. I have to utilize a lot of different standards that I've built up over the years. For instance, this is a weird thing for a lot of people. If I'm utilizing something that has a lot of dates on it, there's dates for each of these different files. I start off my naming convention with the date first. And I do this in kind of a different format than what we use here in the United States. It's the European format, where I put the year first, and then I put the month, and then I put the date. And the reason for that is, if I sort those files by file name, the oldest will always be up at the top, assuming I'm just sorting it ascending. It'll be at the top or the bottom, and then it will be in that sequential order going along by month and then by date. So I can organize all of these different things exactly like this, and they will stay organized in that dating convention. But if I'm dealing with a particular project, I need to make sure that that project name is somehow abbreviated, but it's also included in. So I've got the date, the project name, and then what is the subject within the file? So I have to go through that, and I have to make sure I'm planning ahead and I'm keeping the same kind of formats on everything I'm dealing with. This is just part of organization. And I've kind of hinted on this. I actually stated it. You should actually regularly audit any kind of organization process that you've got. And I say, you know, I go through and I do it. This is one of my failings. I do not schedule a monthly or quarterly check. I don't go through and delete outdated files or reorganize anything on a scheduled basis. But I need to do that. I will tell you, I'm also really bad in the idea of deleting anything old. I don't delete files. I just save them for ages on end. I've got emails going on back. As a matter of fact, I've got all of the audio that I've ever recorded for broadcast. I have all of that stored away on multiple drives just for posterity's sake. So that is something you've got to schedule those reviews on a regular basis. Next up, there are a variety of different ways that you can tag your files. If you go in, and this is just an example, this is available in Microsoft's Outlook in Excel. If you go into your file and you go file, save as, there are places where you can start putting in a variety of different terms. You can start putting in titles and tags. You can put in a lot of information that when you tag them and then you do a search later on, you can find that work that you've done. You can keep track of so much information. See, when you search for your files, when you're going through and you're trying to find all of this, it helps to put all of the different synonyms in there, all of the different words that you might search for later. And yes, you have to kind of know yourself. You have to go, oh, if I'm going to be looking for this later, 2 years from now, what are the words I might use? So you want to make sure you include all of that data in. Yes, it means you're going to type more. It means you're going to identify more. But this is part of organization. Now, when I organize files, I want you to remember that you need to organize all of your data the same way, but across all of the different areas that you're dealing with this. For instance, I have my radio show stuff. I keep everything in regards to my radio show in certain folders, and then I organize them all following the same parameters that I've done across the way. I utilize the same date formats and the same titling formats, but I also have multiple folders for that depending on which direction they're going. So I keep everything kind of common there. But I apply this also across my different things in regards to my personal life and also in my work life. And it takes a certain level of discipline, which I admit at times I don't have as much discipline as I should. We all struggle with this. We all go through and we have problems with this. But you need to make sure that whether you're dealing with work PCs, home PCs, Google Drive or Dropbox, you need to make sure that when you're going to that location that you are able to access your files the same way each time. And also, it's great when you're utilizing cloud storage because you can utilize those files wherever you're at. You've got the backups for those and so forth and so on. Look, we've drifted away from the old days when we had file clerks and they would put all of their files into the various folders. That just doesn't exist anymore. But I want you to think about this like tools in a garage. And just as a well-organized garage and a well-organized toolbox helps you find the ratchet wrench and the right sock and all of that, and it's so effortless, a tidy digital space is going to streamline your workflow and make your life so much easier. Give it a shot. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Luke reached out to me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Now, Luke's question, his original conversation with me, it was something that I've answered a number of times, and I didn't feel like talking about that. But it was kind of funny because when we have conversations, sometimes additional questions come up. And I talked about video games and personal computing, and he asked, how did video games influence the development of personal computing? And that's kind of a paraphrase of a question within the bigger conversation. And I'm going to tell you that this actually, we think of the video games, we think of, oh, it's just mindless entertainment. We think of it as, you know, it just existed and it was a way to make money and blah, blah, blah. But the reality is, video games were like new recipes to technology that brought excitement, it brought creativity into the big, huge kitchen of computing. They pushed the limits of what personal computers could do, and they sparked an interest in programming, in graphics, in the user interfaces. The rise of gaming throughout many years drove innovation in hardware and software alike. I want to go back to the early video games. We're talking Pong. We're talking Space Invaders. We're talking about a lot of these video games from the early days. What I was talking with a coworker the other day about the Lode Runner on an early Apple II PC, Apple II series. And we had fun talking for just a few minutes about it. He loved Lode Runner. He'd only played it a few times. I'm like, I played it for a few years. I played it all the time because I enjoyed it. I enjoyed this, the idea of this particular video game. But those early video games really showed the future there. It gave people an idea of personal computing can be personal. It can be games. It doesn't have to be all about doing spreadsheets, very early spreadsheets. It doesn't have to be about crunching numbers. It doesn't have to be about typing up letters. There are many things that we can do with computers. So things moved forward. Things evolved over the coming years. And these video games, they spurred advancements in graphics processing. Over the years, we had to have more and more focus on putting better graphics up there. And those better graphics, the ability to do that really is what chased ahead some of the expense of development into dedicated GPUs, graphic processing units, or graphics cards. And we started to move through. I'll tell you, Pong, that was black and white. And as we played video games on PCs, we moved from those monochrome screens through to color screens. We went from a matter of just monochrome to CGA and EGA and VGA. And these are just letters to you, but CGA was a matter of 8 or perhaps 16 colors. EGA was 16 and then 256 colors. And then VGA, oh, wow. Then we went into the thousands and then the millions of colors. So all of this progression along was chased by the ability or the desire, rather, to put in higher levels of realism. Today we play video games, and the realism that's available in them, it's still uncanny valley, but we're starting to experience a lot of that development because they kept chasing after that for better games. And along with those better games, yes, better hardware came along. Along the way, in a parallel path, we saw the entire realm of those home consoles moving along and the technology that they used to put together things like the Atari 2600. They led into better systems like ColecoVision and so forth and so on through PlayStations and moving into the mobile market like the Game Boys and now the Switch, moving into the Xboxes and the PS5. So you can see that it's always been improving. All of this has pushed us further forward, faster than we would have ever done had we not had gaming. And it may sound like I'm an apologist for all of the folks out there that you might think are just goofing off, but no. All of this moved us to new levels. The internet, yes, it was an information resource. But also we saw the internet enabling gamers to connect up across the world. And that led to greater innovations in networking and server management, where we no longer were talking about, okay, we're able to move the bits and bytes across great distances. But we had to reduce the time involved because we were driving down something called latency. Because when you're playing an active game, a very active game, and you're running through and you're chasing somebody, you don't want to have the computer going, well, I can't tell if you're 5 feet behind them or 50 feet behind them, because that would make the game very difficult. And we move along, and programming tools were given out or available, rather, and that actually allowed for independent developers to create and distribute games, but also other software as well. And that drove innovation throughout the industry, both for gaming, but the ability for today. We have thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of different applications. Sometimes we may have, you may have something you want to do, and there may be 100 different applications that will specialize in that. There are countless word processors out there. So, look, video games definitely influenced it. Just as experimenting with new recipes will expand your cooking abilities, the rise of video games expanded the capabilities of personal computers, and frequently we're pushing the boundaries of technology faster and harder than anything else that we had going at the time. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and IT professionals. And one of the things that I've seen over the years, and I'll tell you, this is more of a commentary than anything else. It's not something I'm going to be able to fix. I'm going to give you some guidance along the way. But one of the things I saw a while back, now mind you, I've only interviewed in the information technology field for the past 30 years, so I haven't been involved in any of the other job hunting processes. But I get this idea, because of the way people talk, that a new thing has crept over from dealing with IT professionals and has expanded throughout all of the job hunting industry, and it's an annoyance. And I'm going to set it up like this. So back years ago, you would go in, you would apply for a job, and you would get an interview. And during that very first interview, there would be a discussion of money. And maybe even before you interviewed, they would talk about this job is X amount of dollars, Y amount of dollars, Z amount of dollars, whatever it is. This is the package we're offering. Are you interested? And they would do that all up front. Things have changed. Things have evolved, and these days I'm hearing about people who will go through multiple interviews, and they will ask the question, how much does this job pay? What are the benefits? And there are people who say, well, that's a crass thing to talk about. You need to wait until we decide you're perfect for us. Well, no, not really. Not in my opinion. So if I go on out, let's say I go on out and I'm interested in buying a car. So I'm interested in a transaction that is going to involve a certain amount of money. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about computers or the car or whatever else in life. The surprise should not come at the end. I shouldn't go to a restaurant, most restaurants, and say, oh, yes, I'm interested in eating here. And they seat you. They serve you the meal. They put it all out in front of you. And then at the very end of the meal, of course, yes, we joke about the surprise at the end. But usually there's a pricing within the menu. When you walk into the restaurant, maybe they'll have the menu up there and they'll tell you how much it is for the steak or the pasta or the chicken or a salad. How much are the desserts? They don't surprise you later because that is a waste of their time and energy and all of the work that they do to put forth all of this food for you, only to tell you that, oh, yes, this meal is going to be $3,000. Excuse me? $3,000 for a steak? It didn't have any gold on it. It's not like you offered me the entire cow. You just gave me one small little 16-ounce steak or 8-ounce steak or whatever. So the same thing should be applying here. The same thing should apply when we're talking about something that is our livelihood. I have gone through a couple of these processes where we go in and or I'll get a call. I've received phone calls and they'll say, well, you are definitely qualified. Okay, I'm great. I'm qualified for this. What is this job offering? Well, how much do you want it to offer? Excuse me? Oh, no. How much are you offering? As a matter of fact, some states have set up this exact thing. You have to tell people up front. And I love that idea. You should always know up front. There shouldn't be any of this situation where you're going through multiple interviews. You're going through an entire process and you are tying up the time of both yourself, but the interviewers, all of these different people getting involved, and all of a sudden they tell me, oh, hey, we're going to pay you $20 an hour. Excuse me? I'm a little bit more than that. Well, that's what we're offering. You've just taken up all of my time, all of your time to tell me that you're way below market value. Look, if you're encountering this, if you've gone on out to interview for a position and they're fighting you and telling you, hey, we're not going to discuss money. To discuss money up front is crass. No, it's not. All of this, everything about my going to work, it's not going to be about my life efforts. There's something called work-life balance. You are going to pay me a certain amount of money for me to go and spend my time, my focus with you instead of my wife, my family, my church, my retirement, whatever it is. You have to tell me what the offset is there. Because the offset isn't going to be a more rewarding lifestyle being a minion for big, huge corporation X. It doesn't work that way. Unfortunately, so much of the industry has gone in that direction. Look, my advice to you, my advice to all of the IT professionals for many years has been and currently is and will probably always be, find out what that dollar amount is first. Before we go any further, before I spend 10 minutes on this, I need to know what it is. You've already seen my resume. You need to tell me what you're offering to me. You can see what I'm offering. You can see what my experience, my knowledge, what I bring to the table. What are you bringing to the table? That is my suggestion for everyone. Unfortunately, this industry is going to continue like this until something changes. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, site ground. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Brian's question, why are my email attachments not sending? And this is something that really hits home for me because I've been sending email for, we'll just say, a couple of years. I will tell you that the way that we have evolved with the usage of email, we've thought of, in years past, we've thought of making sure that our emails stayed under a certain limit size. We would not send anything more than a meg-sized email. And these days, I sit here and I get people who send me email attachments that are 20, 30 megs in size for their weird widget that they're trying to sell on Kickstarter. And I get these on a regular basis, and they fill up my own inbox. So this really hits the first thing on my list here. Brian, you got to check that file size. You've got to make sure that it does not exceed the limit set by your email provider, whoever you're using for sending email, and the email recipient, because that recipient may not have the ability to receive something over 10 megs in size. And that was always done to save space. And while we do evolve and Moore's law drives this idea of we've got near limitless disk space for emails. Nobody's sending a gig sized attachment, or are they? Look, yeah, this is a key thing. You've got to check the size of your attachments. And if you are sending too many attachments, if you're sending too big attachments, that can really set you back. You may also wind up with your security software that is set up to prevent you from sending something that might have malware in it, something that is kind of suspicious, any kind of thing there. So you've got to explore if your security software, your anti-malware software, is setting any roadblocks in your way. Of course, you might check a different email client. For instance, if you're trying to send something large off of your smartphone, you might try sending that same file off of your desktop, whether you're utilizing Outlook or Apple Mail, whatever it is. Also, another thing, too, that I've seen along the way, especially when attaching a number of attachments, your email application, it might need to be restarted, or you just restart your system. Look, there's a lot of these different things that can come into play, and they can really set back your ability to communicate the information you wish to push forward. So look through and examine what might be at that root cause. I've given you just a couple of these examples here. And these are just standard troubleshooting procedures, and that's okay. Sometimes we overlook some of the simplest things. I'll tell you, I've run into, why am I sending a 20 meg attachment? Especially since it's a PDF file that's just text. Let's see if I can focus that down and just send the text instead. Look, your mileage may vary. You may not encounter this problem now or even in a year from now, but think about it for the future. Just like lightening your load can help your car move freely, simplifying your attachment process can get your emails sent. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, The Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.